CliffCentral.com. Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Future CEOs, where we really bring you as close as we can to thought leaders, to industry experts, to executives, to CEOs. And why do we do that? Well, because we want to help you fast track your career and to grow your business. We've got a really interesting show lined up with two individuals who started businesses and have both turned them into multi-million rand ventures. It's an exciting show to be listening to. We will ask we'll get you to introduce yourself in just a moment. At half past, we're going to be talking to an individual who he speaks about how you must make your business structure as flat as possible. Why? So that you can get as close to your customers as possible. Leary, how does that sound to you? It sounds fairly reasonable and logical, right?
Very logical and very practical as well, because anyone wants to be close to your customers as possible so that you can able to change your shape or direction because the customers give you feedback as soon as possible.
Yeah, and I guess it's one of the challenges of large corporate entities, isn't it, that there's so much strata, there's so much depth there, which makes them work, but also it's a slow-moving ship.
Correct. So small enterprises have the ability to move quicker.
Exactly.
Because they've got a slower, flatter structure.
Exactly. True, yeah. Now, that's what we're going to be talking about at half past. Leary, who are you and what are we talking to you about here? Please introduce yourself to our Future CEOs community.
Right, my name is Leary Mosiani.
By the way, you're not allowed to be too modest. You're allowed to brag. brag you must. Otherwise, we're going to get it out of you.
Yeah, maybe you should get it out of me because it's very difficult for me to do that.
Okay.
So, I'm Leary Mosiani. I'm considered an entrepreneur because I converted something small into something extraordinary. So I suppose I will accept part of that.
Yes.
Yeah. I grew up in Cape Town.
All right.
I suppose I stumbled into shoe shining because I was just struggling at the time and needed something to make ends meet. And from multiple failures, I needed something simple and straightforward that I can grow and just stabilize me. And yeah, today I'm called an entrepreneur.
It's interesting. So there's so many of our listeners out there who are listening right now, but then so many beyond that who are, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think I heard you say that you were actually a subsistence entrepreneur, right? You started a business. Why? Because you needed the income.
Correct. So my whole reason to start a shoeshine business was to subsidize myself.
Yes.
Just to stabilize my life.
Yep.
And it just surprised me, you know, in this ability to turn over income.
Now, that must sound familiar to many, many people out there, because it isn't a strange thing. But what is unusual, perhaps, in maybe a difficult economic environment, is to turn it into something that has multiples in terms of millions of rands of turnover, as you do. Let's start with you a little bit, then we'll talk about the business and some of the lessons there, and then we'll come back to you again because you're a very important person. You really empowered that journey. Just let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about your upbringing. You're an only child. You have multiple siblings. Tell us a little bit about that because that really shaped you.
Right, correct. So I am born and bred in Cape Town.
Okay.
First born of one. Only son of four siblings.
All right.
And the firstborn as well.
Well, that makes us very, very similar. And in a privileged position because it's nice to have sisters, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. And the gap with my younger sister is like 10 years. So clearly my parents were like, oops, what did we do?
And sorry, 10 years sis. Later,
and 10 years later, they were like, okay, we're stable enough now. So I grew up believing that most of my uncles and my mother's siblings were my siblings.
For the longest time. Sense, yeah.
Yes, and I was surprised then later on when I realized they were actually my uncles. But we still have that close bond up to today because they all regard me as part of the family.
Well, imagine their surprise when this young guy comes to them and says, hey, sis, how you doing?
Yeah, I still call him my first name as well. Yeah. I don't even call him uncle. I call his first name for everyone. So
you've got quite a large family. How did that help with you developing you as an entrepreneur?
So on my father's side of the family, primarily, they're the ones who were entrepreneurs.
Okay.
They own taxis.
All right.
Multiple taxes, so
okay.
Quite well off because of that, and storekeepers, shop owners as well. So they were that. So since I was like 4 or 5 years old, I got a car picking me up from school, dropping me off. Well, my grandfather was the one who was doing that all the time. Because I think I remember I was his first grandson. And my complexion and my eyes, we look alike.
Okay.
All of his other children didn't look like him. So when I came along, I said, "Ha, my son." So he just spoiled me. So he picked me up, dropped me off. And I didn't know the difference between, I didn't consider myself poor or anything like that. Because I didn't understand what it meant. Because at the time I was growing up, it was like in the 80s. So I didn't know, I not really met white people yet. Because all my schools were in the township, right?
Yeah.
So I couldn't tell the difference then. Mm. It was only then when I began exposed by television and I saw what affluence and wealth was.
Mm.
Then I began to rescale myself. I'm like, oh, maybe we're poor. Oh, maybe we're not. But while I was growing up, I really didn't think of that.
Now, let's quickly talk about that for a moment, because I'm concerned that too many people, especially with the social media presence that there is, it's all pervading. It's everywhere.
Correct.
Too many people are comparing themselves. How did you deal with that comparison? Because, of course, we can't run away from the fact that you and I still compare ourselves to other people right now, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it is if we allow it to become a bad thing. How did you not allow it to be a bad thing in your life, or did you allow it for a time and then had to overcome it?
Correct. So I had a good friend we grew up with, and his father was a principal, and he took him to private schools.
Okay.
Right. And then when he came back, he told me of these wonderful stories of how it's a different world where he lived in, because he was interacting with white people and went to big things. And I couldn't understand what was this. It was only then that I began to understand the difference of my life and his life.
Mm.
And then I began to class myself in that way. Maybe I'm not as privileged as I thought. Until, of course, in standard 8, which is grade 8 now, standard 6, which is grade 8 now, I went to his same schools. And I realized it's the same difference, really.
Mm.
You know, it's only just complexion that's really the difference. And I'm a little smarter than other white people, too. You know, if I'm black and my first language is Xhosa and I get to school, I beat you in English.
Yeah.
Maybe you're not so smart as smart as you think you are. Because,
exactly.
And that began to balance the issues, right? I mean, I went to a Jewish school in Cape Town, so Sea Point High.
Okay.
I went there. Enjoyed it for the most part. You know, I think it was wonderful. I was mainly a sportsman, so what people call jocks.
Yeah.
So play squash, rugby, cricket, tennis, and colours going down my jacket. Yeah, that did well for me.
The braiding, the fantastic.
Correct. But what it did, though, for me, was gain confidence. You know, yes. I knew then, like, I could compete with everyone.
Mm.
Right. Doesn't matter where you put me, I could do that. However, going back to the point which talks to how do I allow myself not to be too demeaning to self because of how I see. So I try to teach this to my children and say to them that when you watch Kim Kardashian, it makes you feel you can accomplish amazing things very easily without having any talent, without having any real thing to offer the world.
Mm.
That's wrong.
Exactly.
So I'm concerned of you watching those things because you don't understand that life is about hard work, planning, development, and growing. No, even by inches, but growth is growth. Right.
It's context, isn't it?
It is,
because
indeed.
The Kardashians, we at least understand that there's context, something behind that
correct.
Has allowed them to have that
correct.
Privilege. Because it is a privilege,
it
and they use it well.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, maybe our kids or a different kind of generation are seeing is just a one-dimensional picture.
Correct.
When there's a lot of depth that you can't really see.
They think it's only prettiness that makes them that.
Mm.
If I'm pretty enough and I'm popular enough, that translates to. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't like there's more value that is required in life in order for you to become successful.
So let me jump in here. And when was a time that you were challenged on this particular point? But let's not go to you personally. Let's talk about now the business. Did you ever have this kind of feeling that you just weren't quite making it and you were comparing yourself to the wrong business? And just tell us about that experience.
Jesus. So my family were preparing me to be a pilot, right? So I went to the right schools.
I heard about this.
And
you did one flight?
No. I did multiple hours. I about 25 hours of the pre-pilot school.
Yes.
But I did my matric twice.
Okay.
The first time I did, I passed normally, like a chalkboard with an S.
Fair enough, yeah.
And I did it again, right? And this time I wanted to increase my maths, English, and science marks.
Mm.
So I did it well. So I got a C's with all the subjects. then I was qualifying to become in a cadet scheme with the SAA.
Yes.
But every time I applied, I didn't make it, but I put money aside so I could fly on my own. So I flew on my own. And then later on, when I did not enjoy SAA and didn't enjoy the pilot thing as well, I stopped. Then my family organized that I met a family friend who was trying to get me to go into oil. So I did a course at Oxford and Princeton in crude oil trading.
Interesting.
Did that as well. So then I wasn't going to be a trader. And that didn't work out. I wanted to do some PE deals because I knew the right people that wasn't happening. That wasn't working very well. So then I took my pension money and I bought a franchise.
Your pension money?
Pension money from SAA.
Okay.
Pension money, bought a franchise. That collapsed. And then I stumbled over the Shushine thing.
Mm.
Now you must imagine my parents, my wife's family, married at the time, but we were serious.
Yes.
I come to them and I say, I want to be a shoeshiner. Their disappointment.
Yes.
My father was like, dude, I spent so much money in with you, on you, for you to want to go shine shoes.
But hold on, did you see the scalability of it? Did it grip you or not at all?
At the time, I didn't see the scalability. But I saw there was some sort of freedom, right, from what I was doing. And well, at the time, I was telling my parents. I'd seen it already, but I did the numbers, right? But by the time, I had multiple failures, so I could work the numbers out of my head.
Sure.
And I went to Msovomvu Youth Fund, and they actually did the numbers for me on a spreadsheet.
That's very nice.
And I could see then. I could see then the actual numbers, right?
Yeah.
So that gave me then the courage, right, to tell everyone that even though you might look at me and say I'm not designed to go to be a shoe shiner, but I am practically am because I was prepared before this with all the other failures that was able to be expensive business opportunities or opportunities into the world. But this is particularly would work well for me because it suits my personality and my character.
Let's talk about that for a moment, though, because you have highlighted a number of failures. Often failure is a taboo word over in America where venture capital seems to be flowing from the sky in just this mass of money. That's failure is a very important part of an entrepreneurial journey to a venture capitalist there. If you haven't failed, apparently they don't want you.
Correct.
How do you feel like failure has prepared or did prepare you for this role? What exactly did it give you?
It gave me strength.
Okay. What kind of strength?
Of self-awareness.
Okay.
Right. So if you're not in love with it, don't go for it.
Mm.
It might make sense in with the numbers, but if you're not in love with it, you must understand he's got his own problems with it.
So I don't want to jump around too much, but are you saying to me that you were in love with shoe shining?
I fell in love with it completely.
You fell in love with it. Interesting.
Completely.
We won't go there yet. You were talking about the lessons that failure has offered you.
So the kind of lessons that I'm self-aware now, right? I know that even if I fall down, I can rebuild myself.
Mm.
Of course, I'm afraid of failure.
Sure.
But I know that if I fail, I can build myself up.
Mm.
Right? I'm capable of doing that. But when I failed the first time, it was horrific.
I can imagine.
It was horrific.
But is it because it's all encompassing, isn't it? So being an entrepreneur, a startup entrepreneur, so it's your baby. You're emotionally, mentally, sometimes spiritually involved with this thing.
Completely, and spiritually helps as well. Right? Spiritually helps as well. And look, you need failure because it's part of the school fees one needs to pay in order for one to go forward. If you don't fail and fail forward, you know
that's the term.
You never, this is the term because it's called failing forward.
Mm.
You need to fail and stop, pick up the pieces that were working and leave those that didn't work. Be aware of the pieces that were not working. It's important to know. So stop, look back, pick those that were working and be aware of those that didn't work. And move forward with those that worked.
Here's a nice question around your failures. How many of your failures were you, and how many of your failures were just sometimes bad luck or poor preparation, whatever it is within the business? How many were you actually?
I think a bit of both.
Of course, a bit of both. the first one, if you remember it, was it you?
So the first one was a business.
Okay.
It was a wrong business.
Okay.
It was a supply business.
Yes.
Supply business are rubbish businesses because you give credit to third parties. Right.
Good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a rubbish business. Second one, it was the structure, right? I was not aware of the layout of funding structure.
Okay.
So I bought the business and I was funding entrepreneurs. Well, entrepreneurs were buying the business, but the product from me in order for them to become entrepreneurs. However, a third party needed to fund them. And because the asset that we were buying was mobile, then the people who were funding them didn't have surety
yes.
for that.
So any kind of collateral, yeah.
No, there was no collateral because the entrepreneurs themselves were black and African and didn't have any collateral for that. And that didn't work because of that.
Which is interesting. Right. So your business was then very reliant on something external.
Correct. But
yeah,
correct.
I mean,
correct.
There's so many interesting lessons correct. To learn from failure.
Yeah.
I think that's what I'm trying to pull out here,
yeah.
is that these lessons then have brought you to a point where, now let's talk about the business and the business journey. There's a shoeshine opportunity that you grab hold onto. How do you fall in love with it and how do you scale it? Talk us through that, please.
All right. Falling in love with it is simple. If the first month you were intending to make about 3,500, you make 12. Great business.
Yeah,
I'm just telling
okay,
you.
Okay, you fall in. Sure. Okay, I hear you.
But also, I'm a people's person,
okay.
right? So the shoeshine business is really about people.
It is. It's almost very personal,
correct,
isn't it? Because
correct,
I mean, you shine my shoes wrong, I'm going to be quite upset.
Exactly.
Because it's so close to me.
And also, but initially we had called the business Airport Shoeshine.
Okay.
And people were not relating to that name at all. The people who were coming to me were asking me a simple question often as well until I changed it. I said, who is Airport? So I didn't know Airport was. I mean, this is the Airport. No.
Yeah.
I come here to engage with Leary. I don't come here to interact with the Airport.
Well, and this was coming from your clients?
My clients were telling me that.
Interesting.
And then I changed the name then to Leary Shoeshine Experience.
Exactly.
Because they were the one who were leading me to that direction. They were saying, I'm here to have a Leary experience. Right? Then I changed then to Leary Shoeshine Experience because it's an experience that we're engaging with. It's not just shining of shoes because shoes are black and white or brown.
Sure.
And that doesn't change, but the interaction is the one that's the quality. And the customers were coming for the quality. And once I recognized that, then I put that into my name and then I imbued that into my stuff.
Now, I just want to – I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you again, and I apologize for that. I want to know how you got into the airport the first time. How did you get an opportunity in an airport? And that's what our listeners are wondering. How the heck did he do it? Because now you're in all sorts of different airports. You've signed over, I think, 14,000, 15,000 shoes. Is that a pair
yeah,
of shoes?
Yeah, just over that. So, just a little bit more than that.
More than that? So my information is old.
Yeah.
But how did you get your first pair of shoes
in an
airport?
So
what did you do?
So because the BE guy I worked for, I knew the airport general manager. I went out, I got an appointment to see him. So I think I went to see him in November, right, in 2002. And the guy liked the idea and then said, no, my retail manager's coming in February, so go see them in February. So February came.
Which is a long time to be waiting,
yeah.
November until February.
Yeah.
Especially when you want to use this opportunity.
A simple thing, like a shoe shining business,
yeah.
right? So the February came, February, then I went and presented to the retail manager. Loved it, Kevin. Loved the business. Said, okay, cool. I must wait for the tender committee. It's this in May.
Oh, wow.
Right. May came, and the tender committee liked it, but the general manager was away. So they had to wait for him. He was coming back in August. So he came back, signed the contract. Then they had to go and be approved by the airport committee.
Yeah.
Airport committee came, and only in November,
the following
a year later.
You got to be in love with your business.
By that time, I was falling apart. I had to sell my car to save my house. I had to ask my girlfriend to move in with me because she was working. I was not.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. You know, people were looking at me thinking I'm a loser. And in fact, on the day I was supposed to start the shoeshine business, all my mentors said they'd lend me money to buy the chairs. And the day came, and the guy had already built the chairs. When I was calling them to say, but can I have that 10,000 you tell me to give me? Didn't come back to me.
Oh, wow.
I called everyone. My uncles, no one came. I had to go to my house, take the fridge, take the television, take the radio, go sell them at cash converters.
But this is, of course, while your girlfriend's at work.
Because
otherwise you would have been in some serious
exactly.
trouble.
Like and, conversation.
And maybe, yeah, we wouldn't be talking today. Okay, fascinating. And then, so that gets you your first chair, gets you your first opportunity. Then how did you suddenly feel like this was a business you could scale? When did you realize that?
All right, so when on the first month, I was aiming for three. Right, and my one employee who was my manager who was international, I was domestic. I was aiming for three, and then I got 12.
Okay.
And I could pay him his 2,000 rands, and I was left with 10,000. I could buy another chair and put next to me.
Now I want to stop us right there. There are way too many entrepreneurs, or so-called entrepreneurs, I would say that you're probably not an entrepreneur if you do it any other way than what you've just described. That take that money and they see, wow, it's time to buy some nice shoes. I mean, we're talking about shoes shine here today. So time to buy some nice shoes or a nice watch. That doesn't make you an entrepreneur. An entrepreneur is a multiplier, I think.
Correct.
I think that that's really at the heart of what we do, isn't it?
Correct.
And so you took the money, that the profits, and you reinvested into the business.
Correct.
You saw it and you made it happen. And I like that point. Thank you for sharing.
Correct. Because thank you very much for highlighting that, because I was not. So for me, once I grew to second business, the clientele grew.
Mm.
It's like, wow. So I moved from 12 to 18. Then I put another chair. Then I put another chair. And then the more capacity grew, the more customers I had. I saw. Lucky for me, one of my customers said, SAB Kickstart had a competition,
yes,
right, for entrepreneurs. So he brought actually the application to me.
Oh, wow.
He said, here.
That's the miracle of having really personal, yeah, close conversations, exactly, with, yeah, your customers, especially, yeah, frequent flyers.
Correct.
So, I mean, you must see some really top executives who are flying around the country on a very regular basis.
Correct. I mean, all of my mentors now are more senior people, mm, in organizations, because I engage with them firsthand, right? I mean, they saw me at the airport. They saw me grow from one airport to two airports to three airports.
Very nice.
And also my growth was mainly because of my conversations with them, right? Because they're the ones who were guiding me and trying to – how's your mind?
Yes.
What are you reading?
Asking you just the right questions.
Correct.
To stimulate the right thoughts.
Correct. And what are you reading as well? Right. Because they said, how do you understand us, Leary? Right. Your customers.
Mm.
And I didn't have a really good answer. Said, read this.
Mm.
Business Day, read Financial Mail. But I don't understand the things that are in there. Said, don't worry. Just read it every day religiously.
Yeah.
So the curve went, I knew nothing, but the curve went, as a couple of months went, 3 months went, I knew a lot, because then I was reading consistently, and anything I didn't know, I would ask them,
yeah,
and they'll give me feedback,
yeah, exactly,
or background.
And what a conversation to strike up. Hey, did you hear about Brexit.
Exactly.
You know, while you're busy polishing shoes, and then suddenly it's something relatable.
Correct.
Beautiful.
And I understand the underlying issues beneath Brexit,
yeah, yeah,
and I understand the implications then, how Britain will be affected by removing himself from there.
I love that thought. You're busy shining the CEO shoes. So, well, Mr. CEO, did you think about it this way?
Yeah.
Because you do understand.
Exactly.
And fantastic.
The guy who's important to Europe, right, I'll say, how did it affect you?
Mm.
And he's like, how do I know? It will affect you because the value has changed. Or if you are based in the UK and you have a business in South Africa, it affects you directly.
Now, just very, very quickly to our listeners, this really goes to the heart of what we're going to be discussing in the next half hour, which is this very shallow or a not so deep structure that allows you to get as close to your customers as possible. Let's quickly, I need to ask you a question about how you've been able to get now your employees to do the same thing. Do they do the same thing? How have you been able to get them to connect with your customers quite like you do? Because no one can do it quite like you, right?
See, that's a quiet part. I didn't understand what is a quiet that's important. So when initially I was trying to get entrepreneurs to be like me, I tried to get them to love the things I love. So I love the financial world.
Mm.
I love the structure of the economy, micro, macro, how those things work. I enjoy those things. But I realized when the guys were coming to shine shoes, but not that quality guy.
Yes.
However, there were the guys who liked soccer, who liked rugby, who liked family stuff, who could engage at that level. And that's the only thing that's common throughout everyone, whether you're a CEO or the guy who cleans the bathroom. We all have family. We all enjoy sport. We all South African.
Mm.
And that's important. So my guys engage at that level, at that level.
It's very important to get them to go to where their strengths are.
Correct.
If we try and push them in the wrong direction, they're going to be found out, and it's going to cause a rift instead of a connection.
They were rebelling. When I was feeding them Financial Mail, they were like, rubbish. I was like, Business Day, like, this is good stuff. They're like, rubbish, leave me alone.
Okay, very interesting. You should have made that one of your kill questions in your employee.
Exactly.
So let's just quickly go to, how many then pairs of shoes have you done? So my information is old. Just tell us, blow us away here, because you're doing hundreds of thousands of shoes every month. I mean, and that's a significant thing to think about.
Yeah,
1,000 different connections with senior executives, perhaps, every single month. That's amazing.
Yeah, we do, Jesus, huge. We do about 300,000 shoes.
300,000 a year.
Shoes, yeah.
What was I reading? Maybe that's a monthly thing that I was I've just misread. Wow, okay, 300,000.
We do 300,000 a year throughout.
But again, what's so remarkable about that is that it's not 300,000 pairs of shoes. It's 300,000 conversations.
Correct.
That is a remarkable, remarkable thing. There's a wealth of knowledge there.
Correct.
That I think I'm very jealous of right now.
Yeah.
Okay, it sounds fantastic, and congratulations, well done. You really are a example of what entrepreneurship is or can be for all of us. Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you very much, Gareth.
But I do want to ask you a couple of questions before we've got a couple of minutes, and I want to ask you about your biggest failure. Your absolute biggest failure, the biggest mistake that you made early on with this business. Maybe we can wrap the conversation up on this idea that, well, actually mistakes can lead you somewhere. What was that and what did you learn?
My biggest mistake was being aggressive in my growth.
Okay, right. Too aggressive. Right?
Too aggressive. Right. We grew from 3 airports to about 12 airports, and I was killing the business.
Mm. In what way?
Ate the cash flow.
Just cash flow, yeah?
Yeah, so you ate the cash flow completely. Right, I thank God for Apple's company sometimes. They gave me some leeway. Mm. I think they were at 6 months of not paying the rent, and they let me go. And only 6 months later, I began then to pay. After I had to kill, I had 12, so I had to kill, I had to kill 9 airports.
Interesting, wow. So you had to go all the way back to down to 3.
To 3 airports that were core, and the other ones were just rubbish.
Was it an ego thing at that point, do you think?
No.
Or was it just maybe bad planning?
Yeah, bad planning and naivety as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with naivety,
yeah.
But you just can't be naive twice.
Yeah.
Right.
So that was the problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, our future CEOs are listening, and I'm pretty sure they're as impressed with you as I certainly am. A final message, a final word to our future CEOs community, please, Larry.
I think business is about community. If you, the more successful you are, the more you build community. So I try to build businesses that are developmental, community-wise.
Mm.
And it's responsible in terms of how it fits itself in the community, because we are social animals. And business must be aware that it really doesn't exist only for income or for amazing rate of return. It exists to develop social structure. And that's really what I would tell all the CEOs, that we exist to develop socially.
No. Well, thank you so very much, because that is such an important message. And it's difficult. Go back a few years to when the business was small, and it was October or November when you were feeling the pinch. And you don't think that way. You don't think, okay, let's be socially responsible.
Yeah.
You're thinking, damn it, I need that income.
But so true.
But yeah. As you go forward, you must structure carefully. You must structure
Correct.
The way that you need to. Thank you so very much for being on the
Thank
show.
Much,
we really
Greg.
Appreciate it. It's a fantastic
great.
Conversation.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
All right. Up next, after the break, we're going to be talking to Jason Ray, the founder of Radar.
CliffCentral.com.